Okay, so hello, welcome to Debatable, a fake television show. We'd forget that. So there's this guy, a tennis player who had an OnlyFans that I'm just learning about right now.
Yeah, no.
And Spencer just did his Googles on it. Can you give me the name of this guy so I can also do my Googles on this before we get into the NBA playoff stuff? Can we please do that right here? Spencer, Izzy, Alabaster, what's his name?
Bernard Tomic.
Yeah. Oh, no. And we just recently read where he said it was the worst experience, the worst decision he's ever made in his life. But now let's just go ahead and promote that. Sorry, dude. BT, my dude. I'm sorry, my guy.
I gotta say, I am stunned that this is the first I have heard of the things that are being depicted, Spencer, in Google Images when you Google Bernard Tomic plus OnlyFans.
You suggested that. I did not. I just want that on the record. I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm just presenting information.
That's great. We're just journalists here, Alabaster. Alabaster's the one before Alabaster, full disclosure for the podcast audience. When we were sort of like in our little waiting room before this show started, Alabaster whispers very meekly, "We're muted, right? They can't hear us," and then proceeds to tell us that he knows everything about Bernard Tomic. So, hello, Alabaster. How are you today? Memorial Day.
Hello. This used to be the role of Dan Lebatard, where he would just expose everything that you said off camera, but now Pablo seems to be the guy.
I'm going to start a Patreon-style service for all of the lascivious stories about sports people that I know, and you're going to have to pay like $50 a month for me to say it. Because I'm going to need serious legal defense for everything that I post on said website.
Just put them on Instagram stories. I'm pretty sure you can't be sued if it's an Instagram story, right?
Yeah, no, that's, they're not real. Now. They disappear, right? Yep. They disappear.
My plan is, if anything ever falls apart, just to start an OnlyFans.
I'm surprised, Izzy, you haven't already, honestly. If anybody on this
live television show
where we debate nothing should have already started an OnlyFans, it is Israel Gutierrez. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're not getting the shirtless Izzy on the train track silhouette by the time this sentence has a period,
y'all are giving it away for free.
I know. Disappointed, Alabaster. Okay,
sorry. I can't find the picture, but let's go into the Warriors and I'll search our office for that picture.
Oh, okay. Somebody stole it. Somebody took it home, maybe?
That's right. So we've had a night to digest the Warriors dispatching of the Mavericks in a gentleman's sweep, and I think it's time to zoom out. Because there have been different iterations of this dynasty, and Steph Curry has been much debated, and his teammates, and whether it's about him or the core. And my question for you all is, does this playoff run change the way you view Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant?
So wait.
Pablo, aren't you the one who wrote about Steph Curry's core?
Oh, I do. Oh, absolutely. No, yeah. I have so many Steph Curry takes, but I just want to start actually by pointing out the second proper noun in this question. Like, this is how Kevin Durant got radicalized. Questions like this being... I mean, by the way,
yeah.
The entire debate we could have about Kevin Durant is literally the same conversation that we did have, because the team that he joined, once again, for all time here, right, was the arguably best team we've ever seen, 73 and whatever it was, right? So 73 and 9, as it were. But yes... we could have that discussion. I just want to point out that Kevin Durant is sitting somewhere, possibly on a yacht, and he's like, why? Why am I still unable to feel any happiness from my life?
Yeah. No, he's in the comments right now, under maybe multiple accounts. He heard his name, and he's calling us all casuals, which is my favorite thing an NBA player could call someone. They're like, you're a casual. You're like, yeah, you're a professional. I'm glad you read the name tags. Like, yeah.
The Steph Curry thing. So one of the things that hit me right away when I started researching or sort of reading up on sort of reminding myself of the Warriors' initial run is 2015 is not that long ago. And while I do think that it should be credited, you know, they should be credited for sort of not panicking and not letting things sort of fall apart and, you know, trusting in Steph that he would bring these young kids along and they could eventually be what they were not too long ago with that core. But it was just, you know, 7 years ago. And I think of like the Spurs, right? I think of Tim, Manu, and Tony and say that was a dynasty. That was over the course of more than a decade. And this, it was a hiccup overcome. Now, a heck of a hiccup, right? Because obviously big injuries and Kevin Durant leaving, but the core of that 73-9 team was still there. Okay, so they lost their luxury, and then they had the injuries, and then they're back. And so I think it's more of a statement on the rest of the Western Conference, maybe, that they aren't able to come up and match that. Like, Phoenix was a huge disappointment. But overall, like, you can't really say anything but, you know, applaud them, because, like, I think of that Bad Boys documentary where they're just like, you kind of know when your run is over. They could have said that a couple years ago. They could have dispersed and gone other places, but they didn't. And it's a credit to them to get this far again.
But Spencer, the whole idea, right, that the Warriors are now in 6 of 8 of the last finals, and that Steph Curry, like, the reason, to go back to the Kevin Durant thing very briefly here, the reason why Kevin Durant, innocent, doughy-eyed, naive Kevin Durant, was like, I want to play with these guys, right? What a ridiculous concept in retrospect, given everything he got criticized for afterwards. But the reason he wanted to do it was Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And should be, because, and I am stealing this take entirely from Good Morning It's Basketball, a fine newsletter by Tom Ziller, where he wrote that Steph Curry's greatest talent is his mutability. Mutability's big word. It just means the ability to change. He can change and slide around great talent and make it better. He can take mid talent and make it good. He can take good talent and make it great.
Yes.
Nobody has been a better blend of individual and team player over the past decade than Steph Curry. And I think a lot of that comes from his innate skill set and what he can already do. But like a lot of professionals, the thing that separates him, some people will say it's egoless. I don't think it is. Dude wants to win. Dude wants to be there. And the shortest path from A to B there is to make everyone else better with the things you can do. And then combine that with everything Izzy was talking about, keeping that unit together, keeping Draymond and keeping Klay on. That nucleus combined with his ability to be a chameleon, be whatever they need him to be, it's astonishing. That's why they've made the finals 6 times in the last 8 years.
Yes. No, I mean, I hate, we're going to pile on Heat culture in a second here, but like Steph is, and Joe Lacob, I can't even steal this take because Joe Lacob said it. The billionaire owner who was odious in many ways of the Golden State Warriors said this. Steph is the culture. Like, none of this makes sense if Steph Curry, to Spencer and Tom Ziller's point by proxy, has an ego that can be satisfied by his teammates thriving. Like, think about all of the insane Izzy, think about covering
because it's necessary.
Warriors. And, yes. No, this is what is needed. And also, the number of people who he has fit with. Like, this year alone, Andrew Wiggins. Hey, you want to take some shots? You want to take the ball? You want to take
Jordan
big moments
Poole.
For yourself? Jordan Poole, Draymond Green. He is utterly unbothered by. And the thing, Izzy, look, you talk to people around the league all the time. Like, what I have heard from all of these people is that there is no Steph Curry tea. In a league defined by superstars engaging in melodramatics from the top to the bottom of the list, Steph Curry is an exemption to that. That is honestly remarkable.
And the way, so this is the way I'll remember this team, you know, obviously built around Steph Curry, is they just sort of brought back a purity of basketball and made it spectacular, right? In the era of the super team, and, you know, you mentioned Heat culture, the hardest working, like intense, it's, they're just coming out here and say, hey, doesn't have to be that intense. Look how beautiful this game is. Look how well we play it. And then you have Steve Kerr, who came in and it's the absolute perfect fit as the head coach. And yes, it is three-pointers, but it's also mid-range from Klay Thompson, stuff that, you know,
a
you
lot
didn't
of play
you
last
thought
game.
You thought was supposed to be out of the game. You have a guy in Draymond Green that on a lot of teams you wouldn't be able to play him. You would not be able to play him, or you wouldn't have in the beginning, and he wouldn't have been able to develop into this person that he is with this confidence, because you would have been like, oh, he's got no offense, you got to get him off the floor. And yet he is arguably the best defensive player of this era, and they made that, not only made that work, but made him the best possible version of him. And so I think of this as like, yeah, like the beautiful game of basketball, like that the Spurs sort of, you know, tinkered with it and played with it for a long time, and the Warriors almost pretty much perfected it, even though they didn't have, you know, the classic big man like the Spurs did.
Just to bring this around full circle, this doesn't change my opinion of Kevin Durant, because he's another player who got better playing with Steph Curry. That's it. I don't think there's – it doesn't change my opinion that Kevin Durant is like the best pure scorer of his generation, that he's one of the, you know, top five players of his generation. He got to play with Steph Curry, and he got better.
But I remember when he first started, and that was what was sort of mind-boggling to me, because it's like Kevin Durant, the best scorer I'd ever seen – has to find a way to fit in with this group. who plays basketball in an amazing way. And you would think, like, let's say it was the 90s, like, Kevin's way would win. But not with this team and not with this organization and not with these particular players. And he was just like, well, I'm just out here hooping, doing my thing. But it was an entirely different way for him. It was the movement. It was fitting in. And it was like, man, I can get all these shots so easily this way. It doesn't even feel difficult.
Yeah, no, the ball will find you, right? This is where Steve Kerr has found his perfect vessel for Steph Curry, because the ball does find you. Move it around, get open, you will get your shots. And the Kevin Durant, like, fallout thing, if we can honestly engage the question and bring it full circle as Spencer wants to do here, the reason Kevin Durant ended up leaving, arguably, is because of Steph, but not because of Steph. It's because everybody else made it a thing where if Steph is this good, you cannot be either. If Steph is the best, you are not. If Steph is that good, you are riding sidecar. And in Kevin Durant's, again, innocent brain, it never had to be that way. He's just a basketball nerd who wanted to play a game that looked the most fun when those guys were playing it. And on the back end, everybody, whether it's fans, the internet, arguably Twitter, more than anything else, us, right? It became a thing that he could not abide because it became incompatible with his ego. And that's the magic that Steph has always preserved. A defense of ego by a sublimation of it.
If you flip the Kevin Durant story instead of, he joined those guys, by the end of it, it's just going to be like, no, man, he won. He got to play the style that he wanted early on, showing off, playing with Russell Westbrook, being told, hey, he's the reason you're not winning, not you. MVP, scoring titles, then got to play this way with Steph, win championships, and then comes back and says, you know what, let me do it this way, show off my, you know, my skills, the back end of my career. We'll see what happens. Like, in the end, like, there are people, Charles Barkley tried to create this super team situation in Houston, didn't get that championship. Kevin did in the prime of his career, and it's like, check that box and moved on. So in the end, like, even though there are the Stugatzes of the world, but he's winning. He will be winning when it's all said and done, even if those are his only two titles.
I love the idea, Alabaster, that Kevin Durant is about to request a trade back to the Golden State Warriors. Can we start that? Okay, yeah, interject.
Yes, well, that's
let's go.
That's part of what's fascinating about this, because I think it's clear that whether or not he wants to be with the Nets or not, he's a bit unhappy with the situation. Ian Begley reported that, you know, the Nets would consider sign-in trades with Kyrie Irving this offseason, KD's preferred running mate. But this is fascinating. Just like Steph Curry is a unique player throughout NBA history, you have Kevin Durant, who fancies himself one of the 10 best players ever to play basketball. And he's someone who's been surrounded by Hall of Famers his entire career. And the only time he reached the pinnacle of the sport was as a luxury player next to the greatest team we had ever seen the year before that. Like, the entire mentality surrounding this guy moving forward is fascinating, of how we're going to view him historically and how he's going to play the rest of his career.
He's such a purist when it comes to basketball. This is why I thought the whole Brooklyn Nets situation wasn't necessarily going to work out if he was the intermediary, if he was the one talking to the GM, because he doesn't need that stuff. He doesn't want that stuff in his life. He wants the basketball. And so when you saw it, when the organization was stable, when, you know, everything was there for him, it was easy. It was the Warriors, and obviously they had all those surrounding parts. But you go, you know, Oklahoma City, it felt like a grind. It felt difficult to try to work with Russell Westbrook, and he didn't want to have to make that decision, me or him. And then it's Brooklyn, and it's just like he is making these decisions, and he is bringing guys in and then letting them go. And now it's just like he just doesn't feel like he's the guy who wants to get involved in that stuff. He's not the LeBron drama type of dude. And so it would not be the craziest thing in the world for him to say, you know what, let me go back to a stable organization, play my game, and let all the other stuff to everybody else.
The idea that...
Can I just...
Yeah, go ahead, Spencer. Yeah.
I just wanted, like, to me, the notion that... all of this comes back to a real big, dumb notion, which I think still applies, which is, it's a team sport. It is a team sport, and yes, talents are singular, but everyone faces those limits. I've watched LeBron James play basketball for over 20 years, and even he was limited by the team. That's absurd to me, because he's that freakishly talented. It's absurd to me that we have this conversation where Kevin Durant is limited in any way, because he's a sorcerer. He's astonishing with the ball. And yet we're sitting here going, why, that he was an extra on that Warriors team, that he's struggling despite having Kyrie Irving as a teammate, or maybe because he has Kyrie Irving as a teammate. even in that rarefied air, even in that constellation of extremely bright stars, you're limited by the people around you, or you're elevated by the people around you. And that's Kevin Durant's challenge moving forward. You're right. It's fascinating. I can't wait to see the way that he sort of confronts that and says, okay, how do I get back there? Or how do I create something new?
How responsible is Kevin Durant for LeBron not being the obvious GOAT? Like, if he doesn't go to Golden State, does LeBron have a couple more? And now it's just like, all right, he's got six. He's clearly the
but
best.
Is he? But this is where we go back even fuller circle, right? To what I said before, 73-9, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yes. Mm-hmm. Remember what it took for that team to lose to LeBron James, right? Remember the year before when they beat LeBron James. Again, injuries, of course, are the variable in all of this. But the idea that if not for and this is, again, me inadvertently shitting on KD, but the idea that if not for KD, they wouldn't have won titles, I can't tell you that with any certainty. I mean, what Kevin Durant did do to the whole idea of, like, what's his approach for the rest of time here as he plays out his career, is he kind of was ahead of the curve. Everything we're saying is why he joined the Warriors. He is a guy who does not need the ball to thrive. He is a guy who can fit as a luxurious role player. He can be maybe sufficient but not necessary. You know, and he do it. But now, in order to satiate the mob, all the people who have radicalized him, he needs to do the exact opposite of what his instincts as a basketball genius, as a sorcerer, to quote Spencer here, what they have told him. Because he tried it, and guess what he got? He got the feeling of being a loser despite being the finals MVP over Steph Curry twice in 2 years.
Loser.
You're a casual. That's a casual opinion.
I'm totally a casual. I've been thinking about I've sort of drafted a couple of tweets that said, hey, would this get Kevin Durant to respond to me? And then I'm just like, I don't want to play that game. Never mind. I am not the social media troll. Not gonna do it. But Pablo, you should.
I have a feeling that Izzy has already created a burner account and he is well on his way to testing the theories he has become too ashamed to publicly develop.
That's just so much trouble. I can barely remember one password. I would definitely be in the
Izzy Spencer, you remember
tweeting out of my real
remember
account.
When Izzy got hacked and tried to sell us PS4s? Do you remember that? That was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, just getting
did you get yours, like, Spence, by the
hello,
way?
Hello, Patriot. Hello, Patriot.
All right, guys. Well, let's hop on over to the Eastern Conference, where the series is not over, but after Game 5 sort of feels that way. And my question, how much of a chance do you give Izzy's beloved Miami Heat tonight?
Based on that walk from the bus to the entrance of the hotel, not very much.
I missed it. For the podcast audience, for people who maybe missed the visuals of this, what did it look like?
Well, it's just a very sad exit from the bus, and then you've got Kyle Lowry, who is clearly just broken, can't really walk, and somebody might have made him a little bit bigger in another image. And so it's one of those deals where it's not only is he injured, but now we're going to make fun of him for not being in the condition that, you know, it takes the Miami Heat greats to be in. And so, it doesn't look great for them. However, they've convinced themselves that, you know, 0-for-23 on open shots and you give up 93 points, you know, you can win a game by making some shots.
Is that an actual stat? Is 0-for-23 an actual stat?
In open shots from open threes from what I read last the night of the game. And so, they don't look at it as they're overreacting. And I'd also say in terms of the franchise, probably don't look at it as they're overreacting, because there was a tweet by Greg Sylvander that mentioned that somebody in the Heat organization told him that 4 of the 5 starters and the 6th man, which I presume is Tyler Hero, would not be playing tonight if this is the regular season, but they're probably going to play tonight. And so, you know, whatever you get out of them, I wouldn't even, like, this is one of those situations where if the Heat somehow create, like, this, like, great game, put it together, come out of there with a victory, I don't feel confident going into Miami for Game 7 because this team is so beaten down and the Boston Celtics can be so, you know, infuriatingly good defensively. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised by anything, but, you know, 85% chance the Boston Celtics win this game.
Wow. Yeah, that depends on the narrative of whether we believe a team that is already hobbled by injury and or crippled by injury would be better in Game 7. Because, you know, what the best thing for injuries is more basketball. That's right.
The thing about Jimmy Butler is interesting, though. Put that card back up, if you don't mind, because that is a crazy number right there. Before Fast PP twisted his knee, twisted Jimmy's knee, he was averaging in 12 games nearly 30 points, 54% shooting. Since then, three games, nine points per game. He did miss an entire half. 9 points per game, 25% shooting. And that was the sort of tone that was set in that game five, Pablo. The beginning, it was obvious. It was Celtics say, hey, Jimmy, do whatever you want. And he was just taking pull-up jumpers. And it was just a sad experience in this home court. Everybody's dying for somebody to grab this game. They had the lead at halftime. And there was absolutely no feeling of confidence because your guy, the main guy, cannot do a thing.
So, I mean, to even sort of push this question further, Alabaster, like, what is even there to feel good about for the Miami Heat? Like, seriously. Because Jimmy Butler is obviously injured and is a shell of himself, right? Bam Adebayo is perhaps not a shell of himself, but the shell he has always been, if you were to defend him with Robert Time Lord Williams and Al Horford, who's been incredible. Both of them have, right?
Amazing.
Kyle Lowry and Max Strus have combined, the starting backcourt of the Miami Heat, have combined for one field goal over the last two games. They have more games played than made baskets. 0-for-15 from the field. I mean, this is incredible, right? Like, seriously, Gabe Vincent is the only name that I feel like has sort of a positive connotation to it right now, because everything else, due to either injury or just general craptitude, is just
Victor Oladipo.
Oh, sure.
Victor Oladipo, man. Victor Oladipo took two of the most fearless bricks I have ever seen back-to-back. In that game, like, shout out to that man. It was incredible because he bricked it so hard I would have walked off the court, got the ball back, did it worse the next rep. Like, oh,
it's very rare to get a brick that actually sounds like what I imagine a brick would sound like if you were to throw it against the backboard.
Yeah, they need to sort of have the person who's I think that microphone on the rim is switched on and off, right? That's not on at all times. Like, that goes on right before the shot goes up. Depending on who's shooting, I'm not turning that thing on if I'm in Miami. Oh, I'm not turning that thing on because it could be ugly. So, it could be a noise you don't want to hear.
Are you telling me that there's somebody, okay, just for everyone watching at home, you're telling me that there is somebody who is watching with the little switch for the mic and is like, this one looks like it could be bad.
Yeah. Well, I think they probably put it on every single time, but I don't hear that area of the court that amplified during the rest of the broadcast. It's only when shots go through the net, or shots go up. So I'm assuming that there's somebody with a little switch turning that microphone on and off.
Oh my God! I think we've just
this is the Heat Celtics coverage we really wanted.
I think
by the way.
Izzy has just accidentally realized how bad the Heat are at shooting. It's almost
Wait,
as if
how bad
the
they were the best 3-point shooting team in the regular season.
Conspiratorially,
that's probably. Yeah. That's probably the one thing, and not to harp on the Heat, that's probably the one thing that would give them any sort of hope is that these shots may, one out of three might eventually fall instead of 0-for-15 from those guys. But look, for people who don't say that, I don't give Celtics enough credit, like, Robert Williams and Al Horford have been playing out of their minds.
Yes.
Like, if the Celtics get to anything could happen. If the Celtics get to the finals, like, the Warriors, the Celtics are going to feel like they got out of jail because these two defenses have been, you know, just murdering each other for a few games here. And so, it's unbelievable. Like, Robert Williams would have been the defensive player of the year if he didn't get hurt. Al Horford's playing like he's 25 instead of 35. This is the type of support that those guys that are not great fits together, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, have always needed. They can't blow this. They can't blow this because this is absolutely, like, an unbelievable level of defense. But Al Horford, too, is like, you're not going to get that again. You're not.
Yeah, I think those are all great points about what Boston does well. And I think the things that people should remember moving forward when we talk credibly about why Boston versus the Warriors might be a real series. As a counterpoint, I just want to repeat phrases about Heat culture until people stop talking, right? Because I'm going to be a Heat fan here and just say, built, not bought. Built, not bought. We'll be back, baby. It's gritty.
It's
we'll
right.
be fine.
Next man up.
Oh, wait. Next man up.
All of our
There are Heat fans everywhere that would trade Kyle Lowry for Goran Dragic right now and think that they'd have a better chance of winning these playoffs. And he was at a couple of the games, too.
So worth noting, it was also for Precious Achiuwa, who's also better than Kyle Lowry in that trade. But I have a question for you guys. And so with the exception of that one Jimmy Butler game where he got to 40 on a healthy knee, the Heat's offense has looked constipated at best in the half court and incompetent at worst. I think that's a fair description. And both teams are hurt, really hurt. Jason Tatum's grabbing multiple body parts. Time Lord's hurt. Marcus Smart's hurt. And so my question to you guys, do you really think the series would be any different if both teams were fully healthy?
No, I don't. I mean, I think the margin of victory would be tighter in each of these games. But I think the Celtics are the better team. And it's insane to suggest otherwise. And I say this because if you're to go down the list of, if you play this game, Stan Van Gundy played this game, I think, with Levitard on their radio show. But this is a game that I've been playing independently, so I'm only partially plagiarizing it. Who is the best defender on the Boston Celtics? There are so many candidates for that title, and it's valid to have pretty much five different answers.
I'll tell you, it's not Marcus Smart. Even though he won the award.
He's the defensive player of the year and is not the guy that I think smart basketball nerds would say. And Robert Williams, yes, for most of the season had been the answer. And he only sort of reestablished that in the last game when he was blocking corner threes and again, haunting Bam Adebayo's sort of cerebral cortex. But even then, I'm like, I think Al Horford is kind of the most important guy they have. The guy who enables them to play
his hands have been amazing in this series.
He can guard everybody. Yes.
To answer that question, I do think these have been the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, and I think if they were fully healthy, I think the Celtics are the more talented team. And by if we were going, you know, same time playing each other the same time, the Celtics will have also been the together team just as long as the Heat. So you can convince yourself. And so yeah, I would say they'd be like this. But I would say the home court advantage would probably be a little bit more telling if they were whole and everything else. And so you never really know. But yeah, I think the Boston Celtics are the more talented team. And I think this is where, like, the simplest of breakdowns comes down to it is, yes, the Heat offense looks anemic at times. The reason that they can't sort of come out of that is they don't have the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown ability to just hit a shot over somebody. It was Jimmy for a few weeks, but even then, it's just you knew that wouldn't be sustainable. And so, yeah, that would, to me would be the biggest difference in this series, period. And that was always the bad matchup for Miami is Tatum first and then occasionally Brown. Like, they can go off against any defense. It doesn't matter.
And who's coming down the track? Oh, look, it's the Warriors. Warriors are fine. Warriors are cool. What are your injury concerns? We're good. It's fine. What, is this hard? Is it hard to get in the finals with everyone healthy? Crazy how that works.
It is remarkable, man. Like, as much as the Celtics are going to emerge out of this series as if they have broken free from prison,
maybe, if they win the series.
If they win the series.
Heat culture.
And then they come out to find, as they are running away from the prison walls behind them, that there are just a bunch of guys with rocket launchers just waiting to blow them up. Like, come on.
It's just the timing and the smoothness of everything the Warriors do when they are clicking. It applies to everything, including situations, right? Like, oh, you guys got to the finals. That must have been hard. You look very tired. You look like you went through something difficult, you know? That's cool. We just smoked the Mavs. Been over here chilling, hydrating.
Alabaster, what are we missing from this equation here? I feel like extreme pessimism on behalf of the Miami Heat and extreme optimism on behalf of the Warriors, let alone the Celtics, is kind of the logical thing to do here.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you guys were more balanced and fair than I would have been. I've already written off this Miami Heat team, and I think there are significant questions about it moving forward. If this core that's expensive, lacks creators, lacks half-court offense, can get over the hump if this young Celtics team is better than them now, and the Bucks will be healthy, and who knows what will happen with the Nets. So,
well,
I think
it's going to be the type of move, the type of ending, like where some people would say that he would panic, others would say, hey, they just want to fast track it. So it's like, hey, do we believe in Tyler Hero? Yeah. But do we believe we can get a Tyler version of Tyler in his prime right now if we trade him?
Izzy,
yeah.
Oh, I have this whole offseason to me has Bradley Beal trade written all over it. This has Tyler Hero and Kyle Lowry and
Donovan Mitchell also.
Alabaster is like already phoned in here.
Oh yeah.
Oh, so yeah. I have a trade for you, Izzy, and you, Pablo.
Oh God.
Would you trade Joel Embiid for Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo?
No. Why would you even get the hell? I'm about to turn off my computer.
No.
Both of you are saying no?
If you're asking me, if I'm playing the role of a Heat executive, then I'm saying yes, of course. But no, the NBA world should not allow that. Like, Joel Embiid needs to stay put. Like, that can't happen.
Tyler Hero, I mean, look, Izzy wrote a great piece about Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero is a wonderful character and a fascinating
He's going to be an all-star. But he's going to be an all-star
also,
once or twice.
He also doesn't play any defense. And that is a trick Well, hang on. What?
Because I spent last night listening to a lot of Jordan Poole love about how active he was on defense and how he's – and he is smaller than Tyler. Look, Tyler can be – not he's not going to be a lockdown defender, but activity-wise, being like, yeah, he's going to be a fine defender. He's not going to be a Duncan Robinson type of defender, that minus a defender his whole career. Come on now.
All I'm saying is that if you get the opportunity to get Bradley Beal for your precious Tyler Hero and Kyle Lowry and a million first rounders,
then you think about it for a really long time before you make that decision. There are factors. There are factors in there that maybe you might want to consider.
Ooh.
Hold on, why are you giving my Wizards Kyle Lowry? We don't want
How many big games has Bradley Beal played in? Big playoff games. Has Bradley Beal played in and performed?
I don't know. Are we counting? Did he play? How do you play in the tournament when he was at your precious Florida, guys? I don't know.
Not very well down the stretch against Louisville in the Elite Eight. Okay, not very well against Louisville down the stretch.
Point.
And when they were doing some things, it was John Wall leading the way. And so let's not jump on that Bradley Beal trade necessarily. And you want to talk about Donovan Mitchell? Look, I love that guy. We love watching him play, but look at those shooting percentages. And look at that defense if you want to talk about Tyler Hero's defense. So let's not just make all these decisions and say they're super easy ones.
Also, I'm just going to go ahead and object to the Washington Wizards being a factor in any of this discussion. they don't get to decide. They don't. Not relevant.
They aren't.
For the record, before we move on, I would say that not the worst thing for the 76ers. You don't have to re-sign James Harden. You get younger. You know this core is
get
not getting
the
over the hump.
Get the fuck out of here. No, what are you doing?
I'm just saying. Maxie, Hero, Bam.
Okay.
Not the worst
it is
thing.
It is one thing to play along in your kabuki theater of fake television. It is another thing to have your dignity insulted as such. Right. Next topic.
Tyler Hero and Tyrese Maxey as a backcourt. Then,
I think we've proven nobody has to re-sign James Harden. It's irrelevant to your fortunes as a basketball team. Yeah. You don't have to.
Let's move on to another contract. I think I just accidentally broke Pablo's brain with that. I apologize. So Zion is healthy.
Yes, the Heat would trade for Zion, too.
Zion is healthy and says he wants to sign a max contract with the Pelicans, which would be for $186 million. And our question... how comfortable should the Pelicans be giving Zion a max contract this summer?
It's remarkable how quickly my views on this shift from JPEG to JPEG. You give me a good JPEG of Zion looking good, I'm in. You show me another one where it feels like, yeah, he's just been on the couch for a real long time, I'm out. But right now, it's looking good, guys. It's looking great, actually. He's like dunking and stuff.
I don't even want to see JPEGs, Pablo. I want to just see x-rays. Just a bunch of x-rays of Zion. Well, I don't even know what I'm looking at. I just want to make sure that everything is secure and in place because that's the only thing that would make me comfortable about this. You have to give it to him. Like, you have to give him the extension. You can't even toy around with that. And you just have no idea what you're going to get out of it. It's completely nerve-wracking. It's a terrible situation to be in, but it also could be a great situation to be in. It just depends on, I don't know, bone density or something. I have no idea. But it's hard to predict what's going to happen with Zion.
Izzy, are you saying that you want to see all the milk in the fridge? That's it. You just want to monitor calcium intake, and you'd be.
I mean, it's got to be some strong bones to keep that body, afloat.
Yeah, I mean, we can give him spinach too. The thing with the Pelicans is this: what other options do they have to get somebody who is potentially just a solid 25 and 10 guy with actual shine into the roster for the next 5 years? Where else do you have an easy built-in outlier to do that with, of course, the investment you've already put into him as a player? Like, you're in. You're already in. Go ahead.
Yes.
If you think you can find another one, go right ahead. But, give that dude all the milk he can handle. Give him the softest, cushiest shoes. If you want some New Balances, I'm a dad. I am happy to hip you to those. Just go ahead. whatever.
Kawhi seems to love them.
Yeah, yeah. Just let's go ahead. If it works for Kawhi, let's go ahead and get you the biggest, cushiest souls we can find, because the Pelicans are already in for a pound, right?
I will say that.
Plus, if you turn the N sideways, it's a Z, isn't it?
I would say that advocating.
Ooh, we got branding.
I would say that advocating for footwear based on Kawhi Leonard's injury history and footwear choices, maybe not the best strategy in general, but no. I will.
Jack Harlow.
What a dystopia we're living in. What the hell? Like, Kawhi Leonard, who hasn't played basketball in a million years, and Jack Harlow are selling me sneakers to play basketball in? The Zion Williamson question is not a question. It is just a question of how you cope with the risk. Because, of course, you sign him. And by the way, like, where the Pelicans are now, I will own this myself. I was ready to, like, shoot David Griffin into some sort of moon in a different planetary orbit. Like, it looked like a total disaster. And now, Alabaster, you look at that roster.
Ta-da.
You look at the roster, yes, and it is a magical thing to behold. Like, they are, I mean, if Zion is healthy, and again, that is the if we're talking about, but presuming he is, this is a playoff team. There is no doubt in my mind this is a playoff team. They made the playoffs as the eighth seed without him last season.
But a team that LeBron should be jealous of. A team that, you know, was built on the back of a LeBron trade, or an Anthony Davis trade, and, you know, have done, like you said, not just the trade for CJ McCollum, but the drafting. Like, Herb Jones has been, a great addition to that team. And so if you consider bringing, you know, the former number one pick into this mix, like, you're talking about, again, not an overwhelming Western Conference, and you're talking about pieces like Donovan Mitchell potentially leaving Utah and things, you know, maybe not being the same in Phoenix with DeAndre Ayton, you know, situation not clear there. So I would look at this Pelicans team if they have, you know, 60 games out of Zion and say, that's a top four team in the West. And I don't know how you would potentially match up with a team that does what they do or does what he does.
Yeah, I mean, also he's got the indefensible thing of big guy dunk, big guy dunk, big
Love
guy
it.
Keeps dunking. Yeah. Like that's for a franchise that is located in a colorful but smaller market. That's perfect. You've got a dude that you can hang the entire franchise on who does something real cool like that. That to me, you know, production wise, I think all the nerds would agree it completely backs up. But in terms of he got that dog in him casual who enjoys things. Yeah. Yeah. Like I want Zion there. I want him in that. If they're already a playoff team, top four team in the West, that feels like a really nice ceiling for the Pelicans.
Yes.
Just as a franchise.
Yes. Yes. Alabaster, do you have a different view on this? Because this seems like, again, we could play this video back when Zion has his 19th foot surgery and this will all look ridiculous. But this seems like a thing you obviously do with great enthusiasm. Because now, by the way, he is showing you great enthusiasm. That's the big difference, too. The David Griffin experiment has gone so well that Zion has stopped leaking to people who eventually leaked to me that he wants to be a New York Knicks.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think there's like the thing about this Zion situation is I think he's going to come back and be excellent, even if it's for the short term. But I already have a sense of what if with him, because we've talked all year about how wide open the West was. And this team pushed the Phoenix Suns to six games in the first round of the season and found something offensively with the growth of Ingram, the gem of Herb Jones, and obviously the rest of that roster, CJ, that like if you have someone who is truly unstoppable as a creator in the NBA, like Point Zion was last year. It's hard not to feel like this is a missed opportunity for this team, even losing this year, because like that team could have been special offensively.
I want Zion to hold Jose Alvarado in the palm of his hand like Colossus used to do in the X-Men comic books to Wolverine and just throw him at the basket. Just fastball special him into the basket.
It's entirely possible. By the way, every time a superstar says they want to be a New York Knicks and it is leaked to you, Pablo, that's a psyop. I need you to recognize that. I need you
it's
to
It's happened so
it.
Many times.
It's
Kyrie,
not real. It's just targeted
Zion.
To
Zion. Yeah, I do feel like this is not coincidental at this point.
All right, last topic. We'll get to this. We're going to pivot real quick to college football. This has been news that's been floating around for, I don't know, the last week and a half between war of words between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban.
Yes.
Lane Kiffin interjected himself because that's what he does. And that's where we're going to start. Is Lane Kiffin right that we need to start viewing college football as a professional sport?
Spencer, where are we, man? The last I saw from Lane Kiffin, he was being barred by the SEC from going on Dan Patrick's radio show, which infuriated me. But clearly, he is making noises that we can hear. And so what is he saying?
Well, Lane Kiffin's talking to Sports Illustrated. I think that's a little bit different in the sense that they go, okay, this will be edited. You say whatever you want. Also, Lane's just going to say whatever he wants anyway, by the way. And the arc of Lane Kiffin is fascinating because he went from somebody who was seen as a bit of somebody whose mouth wrote checks that his resume or record could not necessarily cash for him. And now he's a bit of a truth teller because this seems real obvious to anybody who follows or covers the sport. And yet a coach saying it is kind of revolutionary. Players are making money. They can opt into free agency. We are a professional sport, and they are professional players. Ideally, yes. Right now, no, because there's still no salary. That, to me, once we consider people as employees, that's when we actually enter the realm of being a professional sport as college football. Kiffin also said, how is it not being seen unless there are changes of rules around caps and contracts? How is every elite college player not at the end of their season entering the portal? The more mobility and the more freedom players have, the closer we get to that kind of free market interaction. Eventually, by the way, this is all going to end up some sort of cap because the most successful leagues have all agreed we need some sort of cap on this. Right now, that's on NIL money. The fun part about college football is this. The longer we don't professionalize, the more corrupt it gets because NIL money, we can say there's a cap on it and it's 100K. Somebody's going to pay him 105. Somebody's going to pay him 110. It's the way it works.
It's curious as to what that's going to look like. Not like taking away like the whole purity of college sports or what have you, but like the system in place has to be overseen by somebody. It has to have, you know, it's very, very confusing, a long process. But I think the reason it remains like possible is because it's not necessarily a minor league. It sort of is a minor league, but these bodies, it's one thing I agree with, these 18, 19, 20-year-old bodies can't be thrown into the NFL. Not yet. And so it remains a reasonable sort of other entertaining version of football. There's so many of them. You know, there's the quality is good because the competition is close. And so I think it's really there. It's just a smaller professional league and, yeah, literally smaller bodies.
It is funny that the NFL, I mean, the only reason the NFL has not already made a G League is because they don't really need that money, right? Like the NBA is clearly thirstier to empire build because they don't have the security that the NFL has. If not for that sort of advantage financially, the NFL would be trying to build a professional league, presumably to just bring it all in-house. But Spencer, like when you are describing like a salary cap and Izzy is asking questions about like, well, if this is on the books, what's it going to look like? Are we going to get like a college football IRS? Are we going to get like auditors like who are actually like, is that where we're headed here? Like, because everything was just so simple when it was all illegal. And now it's like, wait a minute, I got to show you my accounting now as to why this kid
check
got
stubs.
This.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't lie about the money, right? Like that's the one thing. If we're all going to enter some sort of collective Premier League of college football, is that the bookkeeping has got to be straight. Well, there's no better way of doing that than actually, you know, having a salary, right? There's no better way of doing that than having a payroll. That's the way it goes. In terms of, by the way, just to go back, it's fascinating to me when you say that this isn't a minor league. It's so weird because the closest parallel I can see are smaller leagues to things like the English Premier League and the Bundesliga. They pick players out from, if you played Football Manager, I know there's like five of you watching who played Football Manager, right? Everybody's gone to the Icelandic League and gone, man, I found a striker, right? Sign this striker. It turns out it's awesome. Well, that's pretty much what college football is. It's a developmental league. By accident, that it just so happens between 18 and 22, if they do these things, they become pretty good NFL prospects. Another point that Kiffin made, by the way, was this. This is not something that's going to revolutionize the power structure of teams because Alabama already has the advantage of putting 40% of its starters in the NFL every year. Now they have NIL money. Why wouldn't that gap get wider? Why wouldn't it expand? The same people who are committed to it at this level will be committed to it in the next iteration of college football. So I don't know how much it changes in terms of bookkeeping and in terms of how we do it. That's going to be fascinating. And that's what you say when you go, it's going to be a gigantic mess.
Right.
Oh my God.
Well, if they allow them to get paid and all that stuff, can we then allow for celebrations like the Icelandic soccer team, please? Like, can we have them flopping around like fish? Like, we got to bring that back into college football, right? We got to bring celebrations.
you know, spoken like a resident of Miami, because the Hurricanes were, of course, like the number one proponents and advocates for this, innovators and legends, all of them. But yeah, that would be too much fun. That would be way too much fun. We can't have people having too much fun playing a violent contact sport.
Wait, so can I ask about the Lane Kiffin psychology here? Because the reason he can say all of these things, which actually do sort of align with our understanding of reality, but Nick Saban will not, right? That all of these, Jimbo Fisher will not. Is that just because he is, by definition, just a more reckless person? Or why?
Younger, maybe. In the game for longer. Or will be in the game for longer, maybe.
Yeah, the answer is yes. All of that. Additionally, he's at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is in that second tier of teams where they'd probably be able to give NIL money to people, and they might be able to win 9 or 10 games every now and then. But on the whole, competing where they compete, they're pretty much going to be mid-upper tier at best when it comes to resources, potential payroll, depending how you envision that. Like, that's, if you look at Ole Miss's history, by the way, it's like an EKG. It just does this, right? Like, every time they win 8 or 9 or 10 games, just short them. Short them, because it's hard to maintain success at that level, because on one side they've got LSU, on the other side they have Alabama, right? And everyone in between.
I got to say, it does feel like Lane Kiffin, among all the college coaches, to bring an even fuller circle here, is the one that has non-zero odds of starting his own OnlyFans.
Non-zero.
Definitely not zero. There are some crooked numbers in there. By the way, tonight, I don't want to do this again, Pablo, tonight after the game, or should we just, like, I think I'm just going to be streaming regardless. If the Heat win, I mean, I've probably got a lot to say. If they lose, maybe.
I'm going to be driving to the D.C. area to kill Alabaster for proposing that we trade Joel Embiid for Bam Adebayo and Tyler Herro.
Shirtless for subscriptions.
Red blood splatter.
Shirtless for subscriptions. That's it.